All right, welcome back to the podcast. I am your host, Dr. D. Today, in the first part of Emergency Preparedness Week, we are talking about your options in preparedness planning. So sit back, grab yourself your favorite beverage. Let's get at her. All right, well, welcome back and thanks for joining us. Listen, this is Emergency Preparedness Week, the wonderful week every year at the beginning of May, where all of your public sector organizations come out, put out a plethora of information for you to digest, a whole bunch of great ideas. There's lots of open houses with your local municipal emergency response organizations and potentially at your emergency management operations center, depending on where you live. Take advantage of these. Get to know the systems and the people on which you depend when the phone rings and the bad day happens, right? These things will happen. Emergencies occur. Disasters occur. There's a system set up to try to do and execute a set of tasks that are generally ideologically there to support you, to help you out. So, when you're given the opportunity, drop by, say hello. But what we want to talk about today is preparedness planning for you and the family and those for whom you're responsible are really grounded in two distinct options. So we're going to get into talking about today about the dependency option, the individual option, what they are, where it's based, and why it matters to you. Why is this week chosen? Well, I don't know who originally thought that the first week in May would be the appropriate time to do it. In reality, it doesn't really matter. It's that there's an effective week set aside where all of the organizations come to the table and try to tell you a bunch of really good information. And I'm not dissuading you from paying any attention to that whatsoever. In fact, part of you knowing how to execute and conduct an effective preparedness plan is you understanding what your government intends to do around you, right? Now, understanding what they intend to do is different from listening to what they're doing. Those are two distinct and different frames, but understanding what they intend to do. And a lot of times this can be found by searching your local emergency management organizations. And we highly encourage, if at the minimum, you read the local emergency plan. Now, here in Canada, where I live in the province of Ontario, it is mandated that every municipality, and there's 444 of them, each one of the municipalities is mandated by law to have an emergency management plan as a bylaw that's available to the public, and it has to be exercised to some degree every year. Right? So that is the legislative framework and the regulatory framework that requires that to happen. So you as a citizen, if you happen to live in the province of Ontario, and I'm sure it's similar wherever you may be, you should be able to access the local emergency management plan, which hopefully, depending on how it's written, will inform you what your government intends to do when the world goes pear-shaped, right? When the shizzy hits the fizzy, what is your government intending to do, right? That's important for you to be informed. And now we just put out a wonderful blog over on our Preparedness Labs Incorporated website, our parent organization, talking about outcome-based planning. And that's really what we're going to frame today's discussion on, because I'm a veteran, unapologetically served 28 years in Her Majesty's service. And basically, the military is famous for cutting-edge planning systems, right? They're flexible in adapting to the different circumstances, and it contains elements necessary for a time-restricted compact assessment, and it's trusted. And the key part of that is it's trusted. The membership within the military very much understands why this exists. They follow it, and they do it each and every time. Now, there's iterations that are dependent on the situation, fair enough, but these systems have been developed through, in the Western militaries, at least 150 years of experience through multiple global conflicts, nuanced peace operations, and some rapid high-impact operations. Now, whether this is the military, the American military decision-making process, the MDMP, the Canadian operational planning process, the OPP, or the formal British estimate process, they all have a couple of common tenets that we're going to discuss today. One is end-state focus, and the other one is Mission Command. Now, an end state focus is the idea that all the personnel understand the superior commander's intent, the why, the commander's concept of operation, the how, and the end state, what success looks like. I mean, this permits the appropriate execution of the mission despite the fog of war, the lack of information or additional guidance, and the untold number of confounding variables in complex situation. Warriors know why the mission is being launched, how it will be executed, and what success looks like. So when do we know we're done? Very few bullets of important information, but immensely powerful. Now turn that on to your personal preparedness plans. And this is what I talk about, the difference between understanding what your government intends to do and understanding what it's doing, right? If I know exactly how my government is going to choose to respond, what is their priority and what is their other list of important tasks? What are they going to focus on when an event occurs? Because the fog of war is that myriad of confounding external things that can come in and dissuade information. A lot of times, and it happened to me many times in my military career, you have to make important, impactful decisions with far less than 100% of the knowledge. Sometimes as little as 50 to 60% of the knowledge that you would normally like to have to make a decision, and sometimes lives will depend on those decisions. You only have 60%, but you're at a point where you have to make a decision, right? That stuff happens. And so if everybody knows the intent, everybody knows the how, and everybody knows what success looks like, your decision actually is fairly simple because it's within that frame. Am I meeting the higher commander's intent? Am I following the concept of operations that my boss ordered? And will what I'm doing facilitate the desired end state, right? That says, if you want to just turn on the radio and listen to what your government plans to do or what they're doing in terms of a situation, you're making the assumption that that radio station will be available to you, right? So if in the middle critical information and inputs from your government is what you're going to rely upon, you are making a huge bet on the fact that those communication avenues will be available to the government, right? So if the government says, you know, shelter in place and listen to us for further instructions, and then no further instructions are able to be communicated because there's no communication systems available, what are you doing? You don't know the end state. Your further decisions you make are not going to be in line with what the government's doing because you don't know what they're doing because they can't communicate with you, and it sets up conditions for failure. And that's not something that we look forward to in preparedness planning. So whenever you're planning an activity, a vacation, or any upcoming event, we understand what success looks like. So when you're going on a vacation to a tropical island, you want little or no disruption to your activities in situ, and you want to come back happy, healthy, exhausted, hopefully, and having a wonderful time. It's the same when you're looking to close a deal in the corporate world. You understand the intent of your board of directors. Your boss has been giving you a mission. You understand what success signing on the dotted line looks, and then off you go to secure that, right? It's called outcome-based planning, otherwise known as perfect path in our crisis roadmap, whether you're a project management professional, whatever terminology you choose, it's a proven successful ideology across different domains. Right? So we bring it into preparedness planning, grounded in this military knowledge. It's a simple and most effective methodology for families to understand and navigate the unknown. Because if you're in a position to know, hey, listen, I know what my government intends to do when a bad day happens, right? I got it, full sort. I know what they're going to do, right? It's based in the ideology that our society is based are facilitated on 10 sectors of critical infrastructure. We talked about critical infrastructure a lot on this podcast because it is the key element in a modern technologically enabled society. So if you think about, there are 10 sectors of critical infrastructure. So communications, information, the food sector, the health sector, the water sector, the transportation sector, manufacturing, government, finance sector. All of these things are different sectors that operate just below your sight line on every day and facilitate your normal day. Think about it. You get up every day and you assume just by default that a whole series of systems are going to be up and running, right? Now, they are both provided and sustained to you by either government organizations or the corporate world, right? So your cell phone network is not provided to you by the government. It's provided to you here in Canada by Bell, TELUS, or Rogers. That's it. There's a whole bunch of other ones, but they all are owned or operate on the systems provided by the big three telecoms that we have here in Canada, right? So if the cell phone network goes down, the government is not going to restore it. Bell, TELUS, or Rogers is going to restore it. But you need to know what the government's intent. So for example, if the government says, we intend to talk to you on social media, but the event takes down cell towers, there's no communication from your government, right? If they intend to talk to you on radio, but the radio towers are down, obviously there's no communication coming from the radio. So if you think about your 10 sectors of critical infrastructure, and there are 16 in the US, and however they're categorized in your country, great preparedness planning is grounded on your exposure to and dependency on these sectors of critical infrastructure. So if you look at each one, and this is the idea why individual preparedness planning at the family level is so critical, because your family's dependency on the healthcare sector and mine are going to look inherently different, right? I could lose access to the healthcare sector for 2 weeks and it be nominal to zero impact on my life whatsoever. However, if you're a diabetic who needs regular dialysis a couple of times a week and the health system goes down for a couple of weeks and you don't have access to dialysis, that all of a sudden becomes an extremely important issue to you. So understanding you and your family's exposure to and dependency on then gives you a risk profile. Now, that risk profile is inherently important for you in planning because think about what it enables, right? So if a sector of critical infrastructure goes down, you look at your dependency and exposure to that. How critical to normal operations is that? And if it's critical to normal operations, how do I replicate it to the best extent possible while I'm waiting for the private or public sector to put it back in operations? The power profile that we talk about in our book, Preparedness Simplified, Book One, The Beginning, that's available on Amazon, we talk about each individual family and an individual network, whatever you may have, has a minimum power profile. That minimum power profile is what do you absolutely need to have measured in watts, volts, or amps that you must have access to at all times, right? So when the power goes out, if you have to have immediate access to power because you have a medically device or something along that lines, how are you now going to replicate that power while you're waiting for it? That informs a personal preparedness plan. If you're somebody like me, who the only thing I depend upon is my cell network and my cell phone to get my job done, how do I carry on communicating with my clients and customers, my students as a professor, or whatever it may be when there's no power? Well, it's very simple. I need an alternate power source for my phone, right? Because I can run my entire business and teach my entire course to my students, do all the marking and grading. I can do all of that on the cell phone. It's easier on a laptop, trust me, but it can be executed on the cell phone. So I have power banks, right? I have separate power banks. So if the power goes down, I can carry on doing my normal job. It may not be the most ideal way, but there's no impact on me executing my job, executing my role in society, and taking care of myself. So if the power's out for, a week or two, I don't need the government's intervention. I don't need government support to carry on. I'm perfectly fine for doing that, right? I have the ability to generate the power I need to replace it, or I know where to go to access the ability to do that without government or corporate support, right? We know, however, that timelines are important. When you think about personal preparedness planning, we know that the government advocates for 72 hours. Now, 72 hours was brought about for a whole bunch of psychological reasons, and we got a couple of great episodes back in season 8 about that. The point is that it is a timeline. Now, most of us in the industry understand that a longer timeline is recommended, and we base here at Preparedness Labs Incorporated inside My Canoe Head, your favorite podcast in emergency preparedness, we base it on evidence. So we looked at the critical infrastructure sectors in North America where the data, and in Australia where the data is readily available, and we looked at failure rates and recovery rates and timelines. So when you look at that, about, now it varies depending on where you are, but about 94% of the time, all 10 sectors of critical infrastructure are capable of restoring themselves within 14 days, right? That's the evidence we based upon our call for you to have a preparedness timeline of 14 days. It's not a magical number we pull out of the sky. It's actually grounded in evidence. So 94% of the time, you will be accurate. The 6% of the time where it does not play out is because of catastrophic loss. Now, catastrophic loss normally happens in one of two areas, hurricane areas, earthquake loss, or tornadoes, right? It's where structural failures have happened. So, for example, if you depend on potable water from the municipality, for example, right? I live in a city of 1 million people. I turn on my tap every day, counting on that there'll be drinkable water coming out of the tap and readily available for me. If a tornado was to go through and destroy the water treatment plant for my city, that's not getting rectified in 14 days. That's a catastrophic failure of critical infrastructure. That will take longer. That's the 6% we're talking about. So it's an anomaly. It may be higher depending on your risk profile and where you live, but 94% of the time, which is a good bet that I say you should take the odds on, is if you're good to go for 14 days without any external assistance from the government in all manners and respects, then you've developed an appropriate personal preparedness plan. And none of this takes money, right? And I fight with people all the time about, they argue that there's an economic barrier to preparedness that exists out there. And my argument with you is simple. That is a creation of the state. When the state says you need to buy a bunch of things to create an emergency kit, they're creating a financial requirement to become prepared. I.e., if I can't put this preparedness kit together, this emergency kit you've said, and I don't have the money to buy the items that you've said need to be in there, now I have an economic barrier. But if I was to tell you there is absolutely zero data to show in the history of humanity that having an emergency preparedness kit creates better outcomes, post-event outcomes for anyone, then I would ask you, why are you building an emergency preparedness kit based upon a checklist? That's why the strategy we recommend is to zero back on the critical infrastructure and to look at why you have an exposure to, how to mitigate that exposure, and then what is your intended idea when that sector of critical infrastructure goes down. So when the healthcare system goes down, when the transportation system goes down, when the power system goes down, when the manufacturing system goes, whatever it may be, you have that 10, your exposure to and dependency on that sector of critical infrastructure well understood, and it's good to go. That's the idea and the strategy that we talk about at Preparedness Labs Incorporated. Hear it inside My Canoe Head. Drop over to our website at www.preparednesslabs.ca, and you'll see everything that we talk about there. Now, that is an important idea. And here in Emergency Preparedness Week, there's a lot of great information that comes out from your three levels of government, right? Digest it, read it, embrace it, understand it. It informs you what your government intends to do and how they're going to choose to operate when an event happens, how they're going to choose to communicate with you. And then they even have, sometimes they have ideas in there about what they would like you to do or what they think you should do when an emergency happens, right? That's all great information. Go after it, get it, embrace it, download it, print it, whatever you want to do. All of this stuff is very informative and great to take hold. But in the end, you have two pathways to choose from. One is a professional victim pathway. This is the one that public sector resident facing preparedness communication authors you to do, right? Be a professional victim, stay at home, have your emergency kit, and wait for further instructions. In other words, be dependent on government instructions and government knowledge to be successfully navigating an event. The other one is a personal preparedness plan created by you and for you that is based upon the 10 sectors of critical infrastructure exposure to and dependency on, so that when there is a failure in a system, you have a strategy in place, you enroll that strategy, and then you pay attention to what the government's doing, because that helps inform how you're going to make changes if necessary to your preparedness plan, but it doesn't provide you instructions. Right? You're not dependent on government information in event to take care of you and the ones that you need to take care of. But most importantly, and I keep harboring back to this point, a great preparedness plan allows you, facilitates you to carry on with normal operations, to continue the normal things you do in life, to rock an incredible life in the middle of an emergency. A well-developed emergency preparedness plan likely won't have you requiring to do any response operations, right? You are going to be capable of just carrying on you being you. I can carry on Zoom calls with clients. I can carry on all of my business, whether the power's on or not. Right? If the cell network goes down, I have satellite communication capability that will allow me to continue going on. Now, you can say that costs money. Yes, but that's an extreme because I'm a business owner who's created a business and the business buys this. This isn't personal finances, right? So that being said, the idea of this preparedness week is gather that information that the government is putting out for you, understand what they intend to do, inform that in making your personal preparedness plan, have your dependency on your critical infrastructure well understood. So now you are able to continue to rock an incredible life in the face of disasters and emergencies and respond if necessary and carry on and chase your dreams. Preparedness week. I love it. It's a great time of year. Enjoy it. Embrace it. Drop any comments you have over at www.insidemycanoehead.ca or at our parent corporation, WW Preparedness Labs Incorporated. Thanks for listening to us. Have yourself a great time and take care.